Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination, from new to antique, to complement any decor. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign.
And good morning. It's 10:06, almost 10:07. And my name is Les Schulte. I'm sitting in for David Inge this morning on Focus 580. Coming up in hour number two this morning, we're going to be talking with Alexander Sanger. Alexander Sanger is the grandson of Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger. And he has served as past president of Planned Parenthood in New York City and is currently the goodwill ambassador for the United Nations Population Fund and chair of the International Planned Parenthood Council. He's written a book called Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom and the 21st Century. That's coming up in hour number two after the 11 o'clock news. We'll be talking with Alexander Sanger. This morning, though, during the first hour of Focus 580, one of our good friends back with us, Hank Spees from Spees Home Inspection Service. We're going to be talking about our monthly talk about home repair and your home and what you can do to hopefully make it a better place for you to live. Hank, thanks for being with us again this morning.
Always good to be back.
And, of course, if you have questions for Hank, the number to call is 333-9455. If you're out of the 217 area code, of course, we have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455. And Hank, the last time I had the opportunity to talk with you was a couple of months ago, and we were talking about warm weather and what to do to sort of cool your house down and all that kind of stuff. Well, of course, we're into a season's change. And
yeah,
now
it's probably time to check the furnace filters, make sure the furnace is working the way it should, and that sort of thing, and make sure that you have storm windows available because you're going to be needing them pretty soon.
And we're into sort of that great fall weather we have right now. But as you say, we're going to need to be working on our house and thinking about the colder weather. We do have a couple of calls coming in right now, so why don't we just go ahead and go to the phones right away. Line number one in Urbana, you're on the air with Hank.
Morning, Hank.
Good morning.
Hank, I need to have grab bars installed on ceramic tile over a bathtub. I've talked with my plumber, and he says he believes that his stud finder would be able to find the studs, not absolutely guaranteed. And I was wondering what the considerations are in finding the studs through ceramic tile and also to be able to drill those without cracking the tile.
Well, in all probability, he's correct. Most of today's electronic stud finders will work through the tile. And basically, you have to use a masonry bit to drill through the tile and then go into your pilot hole for the wood screws once you're through the masonry. So, yeah, any masonry bit, one that's designed to drill glass or anything like that, should work for getting the holes through the ceramic tile, and then you go into the wood bits to set your screws in the studs.
Now, I have I don't have wallboard behind the tile. The walls were plastered, and there's a wire mesh there. Now, would that interfere with the location of the stud?
Don't think so.
And what does the stud finder actually measure? Density of the wood, or
it measures it produces an electrical signal and gets the reflection back.
Oh, I see.
And so, yeah, I think it should work. I've not had any problem with that.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Let's go to line number four, toll free line from Danville. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Good morning. My question is about re-roofing with asphalt shingles. What is the temperature needed to seal those shingles adequately? In other words, how late in the season can it be done?
Well, I like to do it when the nighttime temperature still stays around 40 or so.
Oh, well.
So that's not a real thing. There are special Alaskan shingles that are designed to seal at lower temperatures, but generally speaking, they're not readily available here.
But. And the other concern I have is the a couple of months ago, you had recommended a particular type of roof vent, And I wrote it down, but I cannot find it. So I wonder if you'd repeat that.
Well, usually we like to do with a continuous ridge vent that has an external baffle.
External baffle.
Veta Ridge is one such brand. But we find that they work better than the ones with the internal baffles do.
Well, I have a continuous roof vent on now. I don't know what kind it is. When they re-roof, do they reuse the baffle if it's the appropriate type?
Yes, there's no reason why they shouldn't.
Okay, so just an external baffle. I want to have to be sure that that's what is there.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thanks very much. Our lines are open right now. If you'd like to talk to Hank and you have a question you'd like to ask him, call 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. I was reading this article just over the weekend, actually, about cleaning your gutters. And, you know, most people think, well, we should probably clean your gutters once a year. And this article said you should probably clean them about three or four times a year. What do you think?
They're probably correct. Or else you put gutter guards on them so the stuff doesn't end up staying in them. And there are many varieties of gutter guards that are designed to keep leaves, sticks. Hardest thing to keep out is pine needles, this type of thing. But, yes, there are a number of them available. And
Some homes don't even have gutters. Is that right? I mean,
That's right. I don't have any gutters on my house.
Really?
I did the other way around. I watched where the water dripped from the edge of the roof, and I dug a trench about 8 inches deep, 8 inches wide, right where that drip line was, lined it with plastic, put a perforated plastic tile in it and took it off, and that, and then backfilled with gravel. So that anything that comes off the roof hits the gravel, goes down into that tile and away, and I haven't cleaned a gutter in 15 years.
Well, that sounds good, too. Let's go back to the phones. Line number one, Champagne, you're on the air with Hank Spies.
Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. We have a mystery in the house. Our living room is has a cathedral ceiling. The house was built in the 1960s. Now, there is a beam running across along the ridge of the room. And in the last few weeks, I noticed that in one spot on the floor, there are something like tiny little debris, little black debris coming through something that looks like where the beam parted from the ceiling. And I have no idea who to call out to have a look, what it, what can it cause it.
Well, there are a number of things that could cause it, but I have no idea without seeing it. Exactly what it could be. I don't know whether this debris is from insects or whether...
It doesn't look like insects.
It doesn't look like insects. No. So I'm wondering if there could be a leak there that is perhaps deteriorating some wood, letting some wood particles go down.
I see. What type of, you know, who to call out? What kind of... profession should that be? Should that be a roofer or what?
I'd probably start with a home inspector.
A home inspector. Okay. All right. I thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to line number two. Shelbyville, you're on the air with Hank Spies.
Yes, I purchased a home that has a crawl space and the water lines froze up last year. Just wondering what type of insulation and the R-value I should use in that crawl space. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, well, we would suggest insulating the band joist, in other words, from the top of the foundation to the bottom of the floor, with probably 3.5-inch fiberglass bats. Generally speaking, if you buy packages of bats that are 4 feet long and you cut each bat into five pieces, it pushes right in there and stays. The crawl space walls themselves should have probably 2-inch plastic foam board insulation, and it should extend from the plate all the way down to about 2 feet below the ground, below outside grade. It does not have to go all the way. If you have a deep crawl space, it does not have to go all the way to the bottom. So if you buy this in 2 foot wide strips, usually you glue one on and that's about the way it goes. Now, if your crawl space is dry, you should close all the vents in the wintertime. If it is dry year-round, you can leave them closed year-round. So crawl space ventilation is not essential unless you have a moisture problem down there. If you do have a moisture problem, then you need to do something else. And remember that all of the soil surface in the crawl space must be covered with a sheet of plastic to control moisture evaporation. So if you work from there, I think it should work out.
Okay. Any other questions?
I think he went hung up
and listened. Let's go to line number 3 in Urbana. You're on the air with Hank.
Hi, I had a question about ceiling cracks and when one should be concerned and when one shouldn't be, I guess. I have a plaster ceiling in a tri-level home, and there is a ceiling crack that developed, and it's probably about half an inch wide to an inch wide, and it sits in a part of the house where the middle level is meeting the third level. And I don't know if that's, I guess maybe my question is,
how old is the house?
About 40, 44 years old.
Well, any wood shrinkage should have occurred long ago. So I would be checking to see whether that wall between the levels has settled somewhere.
Okay.
And this is probably going to be a matter of going down in crawl space or attic or whatever and find out to see why it is moving. Because settlement of that kind would be common during the first 2 or 3 years, but not after 40 years.
Okay. So this is something we have to get checked out by somebody. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Thanks
a lot for your call. Line number 4, Bloomington, Illinois. You're on the air with Hank Spies.
Yes. Hi. Say, I got a couple of questions. The first is regarding the roofing, that rubber roof. I know it has to be installed over new wood, plywood, or such. It's an older house, low slope roof. It looks like it has about 3 layers of rolled roofing, you know, the old 90 pound.
Right.
Can I go over that with plywood, or should I remove it and then put...
I would remove it.
You wouldn't...
No. Among other things, we're accumulating too much weight up there.
Okay.
So, yes, I would peel it back. You don't necessarily need new plywood, but if you peel it back to a solid deck, you should be able to put your new roofing on the solid deck.
Well, I've done a similar roof on the same house, and it's hard to get it that real smooth that they seem to want when you glue it down, or it looks like it's shiplap boards, you know, one by...
Ah, okay.
How small a piece of plywood, since it's not structural, can you go just to get a smooth surface? Can you go to a quarter or a...
Oh, 3/8 would do it nicely.
Do you prefer screw and glue over nail? So you don't get the ends loose and popping up?
It depends on what there is to nail it to. If you're going to nail it into the shiplap that's there, I would think you could nail it without any problem, as long as that's in decent shape. If that's rotted, then we have a different problem.
So screwing doesn't help, or the construction
no.
adhesive?
No, not really.
Say, on interior construction, 2x4 against 2x4, would you go to construction adhesive? Is it stronger? Do you get a better bond with construction adhesive over, say, that urethane glue?
It depends on how much of an area we're talking about here. Generally speaking, construction adhesive depends on what kind. The urethane glues are good. There are a number of the other types of glues that we've been using structurally for years. What are you trying to do with it?
Well, this is a 2x4 where it's a little difficult to nail a certain angle where I'm just trying to get it to adhere, or even a 1x to a 1x in construction, interior construction. I use urethane. It's slow and expensive. It seems to grip. I just wonder, just for holding power, if the caulk, like, you know, like those PL400, are they stronger than a urethane glue?
No.
They're not? No,
they're not as strong as a urethane glue.
Just easier to use?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call. Let's go to line one. Indiana, you're on the air with Hank Spies.
Hello.
Hi.
My aunt has an apartment, and the people just left, and she just gave me a call, well, it was actually yesterday, and she said the bathroom's a mess and wanted me to come over and help her, so I went over. She had a product called Stay. It's mostly phosphoric acid, about 14%, then the rest of it's some chemical names, but the ending on both of them is ammonium chloride, and the rest of it's inert ingredients, and I went by the directions as it, you spray it into the water along the sides and let it stand for 10 minutes, and then I gave it a scrubbing. I got a fair amount of it off, but I've still got that dark beige stain that, you know, it's the same height and area around where the water normally stands inside the toilet bowl. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if I just need to apply it more and more elbow grease, or whether there's something... something else I can use.
Most of those stain removers, it sounds as though your water must have a fair amount of iron in it.
Uh-huh.
And most of these iron stain removers have an oxalic acid base.
Yeah. And so I need to find something like that then.
That would be my guess, yes.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks. And shouldn't use anything abrasive, is that true?
Very much so.
Yeah. What about these little plastic scrub brushes?
They work fine.
Okay.
The porcelain is a lot harder than that. The main thing we're trying to avoid is something that will actually abrade and scratch the surface.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, think along the right lines then. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call. Our guest this morning is Hank Spies from Spies Home Inspection Service. If you have a question about your home, if you have a home fix-up project or something that you're just not quite sure of, give us a call and Hank will try and answer it for you. Our numbers are 333-9455. Out of the 217 area code, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455. And let's go to line two, Champagne. You're on the air with Hank.
Hello, Hank.
Yes.
I'm interested in knowing if there's any reason not to inflate the band joist in the crawl space between joists.
I certainly can't think of any reason why there would be, unless you have a major moisture problem down there, in which case you better worry about that rather than the insulation. You can get condensation behind the insulation if you have a moisture problem there.
If you use the normal...
the fiberglass
with the paper on it. You put the paper on the inside. And
yes,
that should be fine, shouldn't it?
Yes.
Any point in leaving a air gap or anything like that?
No, you don't want to do that.
But
the other option would be to cut and caulk in foam plastic boards, which is a much larger pain to put in.
What about the bubble wrap? I call it bubble wrap, the aluminized stuff.
Yeah.
That, of course, loses its pressure in years, but it should still work.
Yes, it should. It should.
And that you would want to caulk around?
You'd want to caulk that, yes.
And, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. It's 10:25. You're listening to Focus 580, and let's go to line number three, Champagne. You're on the air with Hank Spies.
Good morning. I just so we started to put our kind of fall planning list together, and I just came on, so I don't know if we've already talked about this, but it's about caulking. And so we went outside to see just, you know, where we would need to put it, and you know what? We don't have any caulking because we have vinyl siding.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's like little edges all around the windows and the doors, the vinyl edges, edging. And so that seems to provide whatever.
Yeah, that'll give you your weather seal.
But
you've got a J mold there. It's a J-shaped piece.
Okay, right, Right. So now, but we do still have some drafts sometimes. We'd noticed them last winter, so that's why we wanted to get this done. And we thought that it was just the caulking was bad, so we were going to take care of it. And never having lived in a vinyl-sided house, we didn't know that there wasn't any. So how could some of those drafts be getting in, and how, what can we do about it?
Well, generally speaking, that J-mold is supposed to be set in caulk. Now, you can't get to the backside of it anymore to do that.
Okay.
That's the real problem, is the fact that apparently somebody did not flash it properly when they put the windows in to begin with.
Okay, so is there anything we can do, like, internally or inside or anything?
Well, it depends on where it's coming out, but I suspect not.
Okay. Would that have to be totally redone?
In the long run, possibly. We may also have water leakage problems. You say you're getting air. I suspect you may also be getting water in behind the siding.
Okay.
And
how can we check for that?
Well, you have to unlock a piece of siding and look behind it.
Okay. And so, okay. So, but there's no other way to tell by looking at, just, you know, without taking it apart.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
So we might be in for a surprise or shock later on.
There's an awful lot of vinyl siding that is being improperly installed.
So that's the problem.
Good chance of it.
Okay. Okay. Well, but maybe we should look for just, I'm just trying to think how else we would look for something like that other than just to take it apart. So maybe around where we feel a draft, maybe that would be a good candidate for just checking on.
Right.
Okay.
Use a cigarette or something rather than see where the smoke blows.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that'd be one way to check on that. Okay. Now, the other question we have, we were considering putting up a pergola on our patio, over our patio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the stone patio, the separate stones, I forget, the paved,
mm-hmm.
paved patio. And we want to kind of put it over that. Now, one of the things that were, a couple of questions we were wondering about is on cost, like per foot, and what we should look for from someone who, you know.
Well, the main thing is, how is it going to be supported? Are they going to put any kind of base under the posts that hold this thing up? Because just setting it on the patio may not be adequate.
Okay. So you mean they might have to put it into cement or something?
Yeah. You lift out a paver and
okay.
Put down a concrete column and then put the paver back on and support the posts for the pergola on that.
Okay. And what are some of the are they pretty standard as far as how they're built, or are there a lot of variations as far as...
There's as many variations as there are carpenters.
Is that right? Okay. So thickness of the wood, or, you know, how...
Is it pressure-treated
like
wood? Is it going to be redwood? All this sort of thing.
Now, the pressure-treated would be the best kind for outdoors? That gets a real good hammering by the sun, especially in the summer.
Well, redwood is good, but it's kind of expensive.
Okay.
Pressure treated, we've got a couple of different varieties these days of treatments, and for something like that, you probably do not want a borate treatment, treated wood. You want the... someone objected to the idea that there was some arsenic in some of the pressure treated wood. Not that anybody really had any problem with it,
mm-hmm.
but of course, this put the do-gooders in full cry, so now they've abandoned the use of arsenic in it, and the new stuff is considerably different. It's quite corrosive.
Oh.
So
it rains, it might drain off of it?
Well, mostly it's a matter of, will it eat the nails off?
Oh. Oh, no.
Yes, you have to use stainless steel.
Stainless steel nails.
Nails or screws or something like this with this kind of...
Okay. So we should specify that?
If they're using that type of treatment on the wood, yeah.
Okay. So, but you said no borate.
Borates are too water soluble.
Okay. Okay. So anything other than that...
Borates work well if they're kept dry.
But this isn't going to happen. So.
Right.
Okay, so if they use any other kind of treatment, then we need to make sure they're using the stainless steel.
Or double-dipped galvanized or something like this, because ordinary steel, those things will corrode them pretty rapidly.
Okay, all right. So this is going to increase cost, too.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Okay, all right. Well, thanks for your help.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's 10:31. You're listening to Focus 580. We're a little bit more than halfway through our first hour this morning, and our guest is Hank Spies from Spies Home Inspection Service. If you have a call for Hank and a question you'd like to ask about your home, the number to call is 333-9455, or if you're out of the 217 area code, 800-222-9455. And let's go to line one. We have a call in Urbana. Good morning.
Good morning. Hank, I'm wondering if you'd have an opinion on my theory that a round house would be much more energy efficient than a square rectangular house because it presents less of a face to the winter wind, which makes it less penetrable by that wind and the cold. Have you any opinion in regards to construction?
Well, it probably would be, but considering how much of a pain it is, you can afford to put in more insulation instead.
Oh, yeah? Uh-huh.
Because constructing a round or hexagonal or any of those takes so much more labor and more materials and so on, you're better off to go to a heavier insulated wall and not worry about the shape.
Huh. Why would it take more labor or more materials?
Because nothing is square.
You what?
Nothing is square.
Uh-huh. Okay, let me ask you one more question then. When you walk in, you know, a place, most ceilings are like 8, maybe even 10 feet tall, and now my basement is 7.5 feet tall. Is there any reason why houses cannot be constructed with 7.5 foot, 8 foot ceilings as opposed to 9 or 10 feet ceilings?
Not at all.
Uh-huh. Is there a code problem?
There is a code that says that more than half of the ceiling in a given room has to be over 7'6".
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Yeah, because I don't notice it when I go in my basement, you know, but then I see a lot of seemingly wasted material or wasted space at 8-10 foot ceilings, but I was just scared.
Well, a lot of people figure they stay cooler.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a holdover from the pre-air conditioning days.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it does feel more spacious, and much depends upon your height.
Uh-huh.
I had a friend of mine who was 6'8", and he didn't like 8-foot ceilings at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it. Our lines are open right now, so if you want to get in and ask Hank a call, you can get to right through 333-9455, 800-222-9455 are the numbers to call. The last caller, I thought, brought up an interesting question about home design, which I've never really thought of before for our area. So in your opinion, you think the basic home design that we have is pretty good.
Yeah. See, our real problem in walls is the fact that we've got so much wood in them. And as soon as you go away from the basic square and right angles and so on, it takes additional studs at the odd angles and this sort of thing. And that really is much more difficult to insulate.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me a while back, anyway, I mean, we might be talking like the 80s or something like that, solar and indirect solar homes seemed to sort of be very popular. People were trying to build along those lines. But I don't see that as much anymore. Is that true or just my impression of things?
I don't know. It depends on where in the country you are. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of places where they build a lot of so-called green houses. Mm-hmm.
I guess around here is what I mean. Mm-hmm.
Around here. They haven't proven to be awfully practical in that we don't get that much solar gain in the wintertime when we'd like to have it, and we get a tremendous amount in the summertime when we don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be very precisely designed, and half of the ones that I've seen that were built 15, 20 years ago with those designs, somebody has come in and remodeled the thing so it no longer works.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be prepared to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got it done. Now, I have absolutely nothing against passive solar. Active solar to date is not a paying proposition. Mm-hmm. But passive solar can be.
So really just sort of better off to make sure our home is well insulated, right?
That's right. Well insulated, and we do want some passive solar design. We want some shading on south and west windows, particularly west windows in the summertime, and enough overhang so that we shade south windows in the summertime, but with a calculated overhang so that we get solar gain in the winter.
Okay, sounds
good. This can be done.
Let's go back to the phones. Line 1 in Urbana, you're on the air with Hank Spees.
Line 1?
Yep.
Okay. Got a couple of questions. You were talking about burying a perforated tile at an 8-inch depth for your no-gutter house.
Yes.
What diameter and what material is the tile?
It's plastic, and it's regular black. It's made for farm drain purposes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's no specific diameter. It only comes in one size?
Oh, it comes in lots of sizes, but 4 inches is plenty.
4 inches is plenty. Okay, good. And the other thing I wondered was, if you're thinking about replacing windows, there is such a bewildering array of choices. Do you have any sensible recommendation for some kind of mid-range, good place to start?
Well, it all depends on what you're looking for. I mean, there are plastic ones, there are plastic-coated wood ones, there are aluminum-coated wood ones.
Not plastic.
Okay. Any of the major brands, for instance, Anderson, Pella, and so on, have good quality replacement windows.
Okay.
And I agree. I don't think I would put in plastic windows either. But
how about they come in various R values? What's a good R value to show?
Well, what you want to do is get basically a low E glass.
Low E glass.
Yes, you'll get a double glazing with a low E, and you may or may not get an argon fill between them. Usually you do.
Uh-huh.
And argon doesn't transmit heat as well as air does. But basically the low E glass reduces the heat loss through the glass. You'll probably get an R value somewhere around 0.25, 0.3, uh-huh, somewhere in that range, whereas standard double glass is 0.5.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's go to line 2 and Champagne. You're on the air with Hank.
Hi, thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
Maybe repeating what a previous caller said. I have a tri-level, and below the main level is a crawl space. The people who had the house before me were fairly affluent, and I'm wondering how come they didn't insulate that. And my question is there any reason not to insulate underneath there? And if
you don't want to insulate the floor. You want to insulate the perimeter of the crawl space.
Just the perimeter, not underneath the whole floor?
No, that's right.
How come?
First of all, there's probably ductwork down there that loses heat, so if you insulate it, it gets completely lost. Otherwise, the ductwork will probably keep the crawl space fairly warm in the 50s or something like that, and you gain heat back. In the summertime, the dirt under there serves as a heat sink, so it reduces your cooling load.
I see. Okay. All right, thank you for your help.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to the toll-free line. Bradley, you're on the air with Hank Spees.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for this program.
You're welcome.
Hank, I've got a skylight in the kitchen. It's an Anderson window.
Yes.
And it has a control on it. When you're looking up at the window, when it's straight up vertical with the window, you can open and close the window. You lock it to the left, or if you turn it back up to the center and turn it to the right, it works a mechanism in the window where it comes loose at the top end, and you can spin the window and wash it from the inside. Earlier this year, we had it open, and when we closed it, the handle got mistakenly turned to the right to try to lock it, and of course that didn't work. And I turned it back up center and then to the left, and it won't quite lock. And I've been up in there looking at it, and I can't see anything wrong with it. It's a little hard to. The only way to get to it is stand on top of a 6-foot ladder, and then it's within a couple of feet, and I don't like that. But do you have any idea what might be wrong, or is there an Anderson mechanic available somewhere?
Anderson has an excellent service department. Go to your any of your local lumber yards that carry Anderson windows, and they'll be able to put you in touch with the Anderson Service Department.
Oh, okay. Okay, will do.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your call. It's 10:41 on Focus 580. We have about 15 minutes or so left. If you'd like to ask Hank Spees a question, you can do that by calling 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's go to line one and a call down in Southern Illinois. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm a little confused. I've heard like three or four people call in about their crawl spaces, and the last one you said just insulate the perimeter, and the other callers are talking about putting insulation between the rafters.
No, we're talking about putting in insulation in the band joist,
which is
the space between the ends of the floor joists from the foundation up to the bottom of the floor.
Aha. I appreciate that. And you don't want to do it in between the floor rafters.
Generally speaking, no.
We have copper pipe that goes to radiators.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be any harm in doing both? Or
I would insulate the perimeter, the band joist in the area. I would not insulate the floor because the copper pipe is radiating a fair amount of heat down there, and I don't want to insulate you away from that. And as I say, it reduces the cooling load in the summertime because the dirt down there serves as a heat sink.
I see.
So,
okay, it's all clear now. Thank you, Mr. Spees.
Okay,
thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Let's go to line number four, our toll-free line, and we have a call from Chicago. Good morning. You're on the air with Hank. Hello?
Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
We have a condition in the bathroom where the people above us had flooded their bathroom and it leaked through, and we had to cut away the partition between their floor and our bathroom ceiling. And it's musty and, got that aroma from all the water accumulating with the support system there.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything that I can put up in there to absorb all that mustiness?
No, I'd scrub it down with a solution of about one part of household chlorine bleach to four parts of water, and that will kill it. And then once it's dry and stays dry, the fungal material cannot grow.
Well, is there anything I could also maybe inject in that area to kind of, absorb it? I'm hesitant about scrubbing down boards and wood. It's up there in the ceiling. I hate to make it any more damp than it had become.
Well, the as I say, the chlorine bleach will kill it.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks a lot. We have about 10 or 12 minutes yet that we can take calls here on Focus 580 on this Monday morning. Our guest is Hank Spees from Spees Home Inspection Service. So if you have a question about your home, maybe a little oddity that you've been wondering about, Hank will do his best to try and answer it for you. Our numbers are 333-9455, or if you're out of the 217 area code, 800-222-9455. And Hank, let's go back to the lines. Line number one, Champagne. You're on the air with Hank.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I have a question to solar energy that I heard you guys just talking about. We're thinking about replacing our roof, and we'd heard about solar shingles mm-hmm. that you can put on your roof, and thinking about getting the roof done. Does it even make sense in Illinois to get a solar
roof?
So
far, it is not economically justifiable.
Okay. Because I guess the roofs aren't really that cheap either. And what about the net metering? I guess that's what it's called, where if you produce too much energy, then
You can do that. The odds of any house that you could retrofit to do that are very small. If you were building from the start, there are a few places where this is feasible. However, you're talking in the thousands of dollars on electronic controls and so on. So
actually, it wouldn't really make any sense in this area then.
Not on an existing house, no.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Line number two, Finley. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Would you insulate the water pipes in a crawl space? I've been listening to you talk about all the other insulating things. Would you do that to keep the water freeze?
Well, if you insulate the walls, it should not be a freezing problem. And to keep you seal at the plate You seal that down and you insulate the walls. It should never freeze down there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Line number three, Champagne, you're on the air.
Yes, I heard you came in late, but anyway, did you say something about argon between windows? We just had some put in. What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing's wrong with it.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's very good. It's a little more expensive, but yes, the argon-filled windows are excellent.
Oh, good. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
What exactly does the argon gas do?
Well, when you have multiple planes of glass, in other words, they, rather than having air between them, they have the argon gas, mm-hmm. and that does not transmit as much heat as air does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
line number four, Bloomfield, Indiana. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Yes, Hank. We are building a cabin, I guess you would say. It's up on kind of stilts. We're planning on insulating that floor area. And I was wondering whether you would suggest a vapor barrier on the inside of the floor or...
The vapor barrier has to go on the warm side.
Okay, I realize that, but on the underneath side of the subfloor or on the top side of the subfloor?
I'd put it underneath.
Underneath, okay. And I heard a person calling in there speaking about additional power that they can generate and put onto a grid. I work for a public utility, and part of the problem with that is the liability insurance that if you would back feed into the circuit when the circuit should be open for the protection of the linemen, it's just something that is enormous amount.
Yes.
You can kill someone very easily.
Yes, that can happen. I don't know how they take care of that because there are a number of places where they do backfeed from solar-generated electricity. I'm well aware of the fact that we need a double-pole, double-throw switch to connect them. And as I say, it all has to be done electronically.
That's correct.
And by the time you pay for the electronics, you're losing money.
That's right. Thank you much, Hank.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Line number one, Champagne. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Thank you. I have an insulation question. Our attic, the floor is well insulated, and we are wondering if we would insulate the ceiling of the attic, which is unheated and has vents on both ends quite adequate, and a fan also in one of the vent things. If we would spray foam or have the foam sprayed in the ceiling, would that be smart?
No.
Okay, how come?
Well, because that's a ventilated space. As long as your insulation is in the floor, you're not heating that space.
No.
So, therefore, there's no point in trying to keep the heat in it or out of it.
Oh, okay. We just thought it might make the house cooler or warmer.
No, I don't think it should make. If you got the floor properly insulated
right.
with the ventilation system you describe, you've done it just the way it's supposed to be done.
Thank you.
You need some ventilation in your attic, correct?
We definitely need ventilation in the attic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the real problem is we also particularly need it in the wintertime. And systems with thermostats on them don't run during the wintertime. So
there we go. Line number two on a cell phone. Good morning. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment and hang up. I've been hearing a lot of people talking about insulation on the floor and their crawl space, and my sister and her husband just bought a house and had to spend about $25,000 getting mold out of it because the previous owners had insulated the floor in the crawl space, and there had been a leak and some plumbing down there. And their whole house was just infested with
yikes,
killer mold. Yeah, so I guess that's probably not a good thing to do is to insulate the floor and the crawl space.
I wouldn't.
yeah, that was a lot of money, and
right.
their son was getting sick too. So I just thought I'd make a comment. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks
a lot for your call. Yeah, I guess, think about it. If it gets damp, that's going to hold all that moisture right
that's
there
right.
next to the floor, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay. Let's go to line four. We have a call in Indiana. Good morning. You're on the air with Hank Spees.
Hello.
Hi.
We have a condo down south, and we have an air conditioner in it that was working beautifully. But we got a card from the people who installed it saying it's time for your super-duper whoopee annual checkup. So we had them come and do that, and so he checked it out, and he put a surge protector on the condenser or whatever it's called outside, and it went from working perfectly, always keeping the temperature at which we had it set, to being unable to keep it at 75 in the afternoons when it got warm outside. They came back three times. Oh, everything's just dandy. And they could not find anything wrong. So it has, and then we got a bill for energy for the past month. It was higher, at a higher rate than any we'd had before, although we had it set at 80 when we left. So my question is, what would you do? I mean, are there some...
Find a different serviceman.
Pardon?
Find a different serviceman.
Oh, yeah, that's on the top of my list when I go back down there. But I'm just wondering. Okay.
Putting on a surge protector should not do anything of that sort.
No, I didn't think it would, but no. That was one of the. That was about the only thing he did.
How old is the air conditioner?
Just a few years. It's only about 3 or 4 years old.
Okay, then that should be efficient enough that there shouldn't be a problem. Now, I'm wondering if we are getting some blockage that's keeping the airflow down, because you have to, in order to cool, you have to have about twice as much airflow for cooling as you do for heating.
Uh-huh.
So if something, a filter got blocked, something dropped across the duct, something or other that is reducing the airflow through the system, that will do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, the ducts, of course, are very hard to get up into. But so I should just call somebody who that I can get a recommendation for and say, come see what they did.
Yeah, as I say, you, generally speaking, if you put a thermometer in front of the return air intake and then after a few minutes move it to the outlet, the temperature should be about 10 degrees to 13 degrees lower. If it is more than 10 to 13 degrees, then there is an airflow restriction someplace. If it is less than that, then you probably have low Freon or something of that sort.
Ah, I see. And you said the air intake and then the air
In other words, what we're doing is measuring the temperature drop through the system. You put one in front of what is normally considered the return air, and then one in the outlet. And as I say, you should have 10 to 13 degrees drop.
I see.
If you have more than that, you're not moving enough air. If you have less than that, less than 10, the equipment is not working properly.
Less is low, maybe low Freon type stuff, and more, there's a blockage.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for your call. It's 10:55 on Focus 580. Let's go to line one, Indiana. You're on the air with Hank.
Yes. Question about the crawl space area. We've had problems. We've solved them all, perimeter tile, eave troughs, and so forth. We have a new furnace in the area. The question is the foundation vents. What do we do, open or closed?
If you're crawl space is dry, leave them closed year-round. If it is a little bit damp, open them in the summer and close them in the wintertime.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. We have a couple of minutes left. We could probably get another call in if someone wants to call real quickly, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. My question, real quick, Hank, is about fireplaces. Everyone loves their fireplace, but I understand you can actually lose a lot of heat in the wintertime through your
Certainly
fireplace.
Certainly can.
How do we prevent that other than just closing the damper? I guess just closing the damper.
Just closing the damper, putting glass doors on it, things like this. Anything to keep the air from circulating up through the chimney. Mm-hmm. We paid to heat that air in the house. We don't want to blow it out the roof.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Line two, Champagne, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question about, I think it's called the soffit, the area underneath the roof that where the
yes.
roof overhang is.
Mm-hmm.
The house has like quarter inch plywood and then maybe, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches of screen right before the gutter, and the plywood is all getting to be in pretty bad shape. And we're wondering if you can replace that with either aluminum or steel or something that would be vented and that would have adequate ventilation to yeah. run our whole house fan.
You can if you take the plywood off and replace it with
right.
the aluminum or steel, the case may be. But otherwise, yes.
Okay. Is one or the other better in terms of the aluminum or the steel?
Probably aluminum.
Okay. And I would presume then we wouldn't have to paint and worry about that.
Right.
And if we buy the vented kind, it would be adequate for the whole house fan.
It depends. There should be enough vent there for a whole house fan.
All right, thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks very much for your call, and I think that's going to have to be our last call here this morning. Hank, thanks again, as always, for your wise and sage advice on fixing up our homes.
Good.
All right.
Always good to be here.
Thanks. Coming up in hour number two, shortly after the 11 o'clock news, we're going to be talking with Alexander Sanger and his book, Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century. And again, we'll be talking with Alexander Sanger in the second hour of Focus 580. Thanks for all your calls this morning. It is 77 degrees outside. We're looking for a high today of about 85. And we'll be back after the
AM 580 news. Thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, Champaign's exclusive Subaru dealer, on Route 45 in Savoy. Online at wardenmartin.com. The phone number is 217-352-8910 for Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy.
And it is 10:58. Time now for Market Reports with Jay Pierce. Jay?
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Thank you very much, Les, and good morning. The December wheat contract on the Chicago Board of Trade...